wasn't here behind the mic, I would be where you are listening to this program tonight. Hello from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. I am Jeremy Scott, and tonight on this episode 200, that's right, it's the 200th episode that I've hosted a paranormal program, and I thank you for being along, some more than others. That is crazy. That is mad. 818-672-6865 is our call-in number tonight and every night. 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865, or you can Skype into the program at Into Paranormal. Preston Dennett tonight, more true accounts of UFO and ET contact. If you have not heard Preston speak before on these subjects, you are in for a treat, because he manages to gather some pretty, pretty awesome stories. Awesome in the sense that they are unlike stories heard elsewhere. That's certain for true. And Preston always has aspects that I've never heard of. Preston is a ufologist and a ghost hunter, and everything else. He's really the full meal deal when it comes to the paranormal. And so Preston Dennett tonight on the show. I welcome, though, your input at any time. We're going to get into a topic here in just a bit about whether or not there are more UFOs being reported these days, if that is actually the case. Certainly there are many reports out there that would lead you to believe that is the truth, that today in 2017, in the technological age that we live in, there are more UFOs being reported now more so than ever. We'll get into some of the reasons about that tonight, of course. Though, but everybody heard, right, what happened just a couple of nights ago. It was certainly the talk of all the morning news programs on Monday. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, let me just say the fact that there was another mess up when it came to awarding a rightful recipient an award live on broadcast television. Enough said, if you ask me. Some are actually saying that it goes to prove that we live in a computer simulation. Of course, I thought right after it happened that it certainly was proof of something. It might have been proof that we do live in an alternate reality in which there was something actually supposed to occur and something completely opposite occurred. Proof of an alternate reality, some would say. Is it proof of a computer simulation? Some are saying that as well. What is for sure is that Steve Harvey is no longer alone in this. If you don't know what he was involved with, well, it was the beauty pageant or the America's whatever universe, Miss Universe, and it totally awarded that to the wrong person. What all does this say about the society that we live in? Does it prove we're human? Yeah, I can live with that. Does it prove that we live in a computer simulation? Elon Musk has even come out and said lately that he believes that we are living in a computer simulation. Of course, if we were living in a computer simulation, then I would think the world would be a whole lot happier. Because there's a lot of evil that happens in this world, and I'm of the mind that if we were in a computer simulation, why, that it would be a whole lot more peaceful here on Earth. Because if we can manipulate that computer to create such a reality well, then there's really not anything that is out of the realm of possibility, is it? Also, many are saying that 45,000 UFO sightings in the year 2011 from the National UFO Reporting Center here in the Pacific Northwest, where actually I broadcast from, proves that we are closer to disclosure than ever before. I don't know about you, friends, but I've heard this over and over and over again, and we're going to hear it again in a couple of weeks. My good friends, the disclosure activists, along with Stephen Bassett, will be here for a program. But I don't know. What do you say, friends? Are we living in a computer simulation? 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. You can Skype into the program at Into Parabnormal. Certainly it is a proof that we live in an alternate reality, if you ask me, because there was something else that was supposed to play out. And, well, certainly something else played out. That is for sure. I went to the movies last Sunday and saw an amazing movie for the first time in a long time. Not that I had gone to movies and saw crappy movies for a long time. It had just been a long time period since I had seen a movie. And so there I saw Arrival and the story of the hectopods. I don't recommend very many movies because I usually don't, well, like I said, I don't go to many movies, so I don't have a recommendation. And although this came with mixed reviews, depending on who you talk about, well, for me, it certainly was intriguing. And, I would recommend that if you're looking to be entertained and you appreciate an alternative storyline, it's certainly not one that is mainstream, well, that you check out Arrival at the box office. I did enjoy it. Well, tonight in Parabnormal News, we have got, as always, some very interesting stories with John Jeter, bottom of the hour. Curse of presidential proportions. Also, we're going to get into a story about alien surgery. And an Ouija board gets a teacher in hot water. That is all coming up at the bottom of the hour with John Jeter in Parabnormal News, exclusive to this program, of course. I hinted on it, that 45,000 number from the National UFO Reporting Center for UFO sightings in the year 2011. MUFON report sightings went up two-thirds from 2011 to 2012. Canada is saying that they also saw a increase or a year-over-year increase, at least in 2011 and in 2012. Have you ever wondered about those kinds of stories of extraordinary contact and wondered if they were true? Well, once a skeptic, my guest tonight, Preston Dennett, learned that his family, his friends, and his coworkers were having dramatic and unexplained encounters. So he began investigating UFOs and the paranormal. Since 1986, Preston has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. He's a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, a ghost hunter, a paranormal researcher, now the author of 20 books, and more than 100 articles on the paranormal. He teaches classes and lectures on paranormal subjects across the United States. His website is Preston Dennett with two N's and two T's, .weebly.com. You can click the link at parabnormalradio.com. And tonight we're going to discuss Preston's latest collection of all new original stories from inside UFOs, true accounts of contact with extraterrestrials. If you ask yourself at any point in time tonight, are these stories real? I would say to you, friends, that I trust no other person in the paranormal realm to document these stories than the man you're going to hear right now, and that is Preston Dennett. and that's a 100% endorsement of Preston's work. Let me click off a few things. Good evening, Preston.
Hey, Jeremy. Great to hear from you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How have you been? It's been a couple of months since we've talked. I know you stay busy, though.
Oh, yeah. Doing well.
So, Preston, this book, Inside UFOs, I want to spend an awful lot of time talking about these stories tonight, but I have the story at the beginning of the program about what is claimed to be a all-time high in UFO reports. What's your take on that?
Well, I have two theories. I think that it's possible that there is an escalation of phenomena. I think that that's been pretty clear since UFOs really came en masse in the modern age of UFOs back, 1947? It's been over 60 years now. But at the same time, you know, we're becoming more aware of this stuff, and it's becoming more mainstream, more acceptable. There's not a whole lot of ridicule factor now. So I think it's kind of okay to report your sightings. And I've always been of the belief that this is a lot more common than is being publicly reported. I always ask people, did you report your sighting to any official agency, any UFO reporting center? And less than 1 out of 100 says yes. So I'm thinking probably now more people are reporting it, and it's escalating. So we have both. I don't think the UFOs are going away. I think as we push closer towards disclosure, open official contact is right on its heels. I think they're going to come kind of bam, bam.
Did you just say we're on the heels of disclosure, Preston?
I think so. You know, I know this has been talked about for a very long time. Since I got involved in the late 1980s, they were talking about it. But it just feels like it's getting a lot closer with, you know, President Obama mentioning it, Clinton mentioning it, Governor Fife Symington talking about UFOs. And, you know, Paul Hellyer, a lot of this type of thing. And all these people coming out of the woodwork and the whole disclosure movement. You know, it's not going to go backwards.
So, Preston, I guess skipping right over that and continuing on with our conversation, because I think we have beat that topic probably like a dead horse over the course of the years. Do you think that there are contributing factors to why more people are reporting UFOs these days? Are they more comfortable? Is it the technological age in which we live in?
Yeah, most of that. I think that part of it is that we're educated now about UFOs. I think it's become over 50%, I think it is now, that polls show that most people believe in UFOs. And I think people realize that this is an important subject. And once it hooks you, once you find out about UFOs, it kind of grabs you and keeps you. So the audience just grows and grows and grows. And more people are looking towards the skies. We're looking. And stuff is out there.
And for those who don't know, it was the stories of those around you which led you to a down this path of investigating all things strange and supernatural. Huh, Preston?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was not good news. I wasn't looking for this. I felt completely scandalized to find out that my brother had seen a UFO, my sister-in-law, my other sister-in-law, a good friend, several of my coworkers, and they were keeping the secret from me. And I was really upset about it, actually.
And so back at about 1986, is that when you started on this path?
Yeah, I heard about a sighting on the news, didn't believe it for a second, but kind of made the mistake of asking people about it. And you know, I remembered my brother said he saw a UFO several years ago, and we all just kind of laughed at him, and he was hurt, obviously, and never talked about it since to the skeptics in our family, which were, I thought, most of us. No, it turns out, you know, half the people had seen UFOs or knew someone who had, certainly. So, it really hit home for me, hit like a ton of bricks and caused me to reevaluate everything.
Preston, someone asked and want to know, have you had an experience yourself?
Yes, actually, I have. I've had multiple, none until I got involved in this stuff, but almost immediately started having sightings. But, you know, I have to tell you, when I found out UFOs were real, I wasn't content with just reading books and going to UFO meetings, or just talking to UFO witnesses. I was going out to where people were said they were seeing this stuff. I was tromping through fields, you know, fully on field investigating. And yeah, I started to see stuff for sure. I remember one of my first sightings was kind of random. I was driving home and out of the sky, I see this, well, it was late at night, and I saw what I thought was a bird at first. It obviously wasn't a bird. I could tell immediately it was a small ball of light, thinking, well, it's a golf ball and it's coming towards my car. But it wasn't a golf ball. It was about that size. Glowing ball of light came right up to my windshield, about 2-3 feet away, and moved back and forth 2 or 3 times, and then scooted forward and up, straight up into outer space, and was gone. Yeah, you know, I didn't talk about it. I didn't tell anyone about it. I kind of forgot about it, almost. And I don't even know how to completely explain that. But yeah, I didn't even bring it up to anybody.
Did it change your life in any regard, Preston?
Well, I mean, now I'm really impressed by it. When I finally recall it, I'm like, geez, I remember seeing that. Yeah, because it kind of made me realize that I'm involved with this in a personal way. This thing came down to look at me. And that wasn't the only time. This happened once again on the freeway. And that time I was on my way actually to a UFO meeting to meet a bunch of UFO researchers. So I don't know if there was, you know, that was a cause or not. But yeah, I've had other sightings since then that made me realize that these ETs, or some of them at least, know about me. It makes me feel like, yeah, I'm involved in a personal way. So yeah, it's very intense.
Does that scare you at all?
No, I've never been scared of this phenomena. Not scared of ghosts or things like that. No, not to say that I don't have my own fears. But yeah, the UFOs, you know, people are running away from them and I'm out there chasing them. I would definitely take the opportunity to have an onboard experience. I don't think ETs are here to hurt people. That's not their agenda. I don't think the evidence shows that. I don't think they're even really trying to scare people. I know people do have traumatic experiences that are unpleasant, but I don't think that's the ET's intention. I think for the most part, actually, they're trying to enlighten people.
You actually do have stories of healings involving UFO encounters, huh?
I do. That was actually my first book many years ago, UFO Healings. I collected 100 cases, and I'm now going to have to put another book out because I've got 100 more. I included one in this new book, Inside UFOs. So yeah, it's a regular feature of UFO encounters. I thought it was more common than most of the UFO community until recently when Reynaro Hernandez, I think is his name, did the free survey and found that like 40-50% of people who had these kinds of experiences report healings as well. So yeah, I think it's a lot more common than people realize.
Actually, Ray Hernandez was citing some of their research with an experiencer study. And you hear free as announcements here on this program because we support what they do. Do you believe that any of these ETs have performed a medical healing on either you or another member of your family? The response to that question drew a resounding yes, Preston.
Right. Yeah. And just think about that for a second. We have all these stories of these, for a long time, horrific abductions by greys or people being laid out. And it was given a very negative spin. When that might not be the case at all of what, you know, the gist of ET contact is. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. I don't think there's any evidence of sadism or Nazi-like torture and a lot more evidence of the beneficial effects. And it's not just healings. People are being taught about alternative energy. People are being taught about alternative healing, psychic development, out-of-body experiences, all of that. And of course, there's a very common theme of people being given warnings of earthquakes, environmental disasters, you know, tornadoes, nuclear proliferation, the whole deal, which again, I think speaks towards the alien agenda and why they're here.
Stick with us, Preston. Our show will continue. Very interesting that we are having We're having a bit of communication problems here tonight in the interwebs, and I'm really not sure what to make of it other than it is a pretty deep conversation that we're going to continue to unravel with Preston Dennett, my guest tonight here on this, the 200th episode with me behind the mic talking paranormal. It's Into the Paranormal, and we'll roll on after John Jeter and Paranormal News. Stick around.
This is Paranormal News. I'm John Jeter.
Happy to smell on you.
Witches against President Donald Trump are casting spells to try and run him out of office. They plan to cast a spell under each crescent moon until he's no longer in the White House. They did so at the stroke of midnight last Friday.
Find Donald J. Trump. Find their wickedness.
Last we checked, Trump is still on the throne. So they'll be back at it a few more times over the coming months, the next on March 26th. You can follow along with hashtag Bind Trump on Twitter. We're not quite sure what file this story goes into just yet, but one thing's for sure, it's creepy, man, to say the least.
There are a lot of other people out there who are trans species. All I did is change my appearance to look the way I felt.
I'm just a sweet transvestite. I'm transsexual.
A 22-year-old male from Los Angeles has spent $50,000 on more than 100 plastic surgery operations to try to look like alien.
Oh my God, this is an actual real-life crisis right now.
Vinny O wants to be an extraterrestrial so badly and one without a gender. Ugh, dude. He plans to have even more operations, totaling another $160,000. The most extreme of them all. What's really happening when you walk in your sleep? Stanford University researchers say that as much as 4% of adults have possibly walked in their sleep. That may not sound like a lot, but sleepwalking cases are on the rise, and medical experts attribute that to an increased use of sleep aids like Ambien. Scientists believe sleepwalking occurs in a state when the brain does not completely transition from sleeping to being awake. Connect with these stories at ParanormalRadio.com. I'm John Jeter for Paranormal News.
Do you want answers?
I want the truth!
Jeremy Scott asks the questions that we're all dying to know on Into the Paranormal.
We're going inside UFOs. UFO and ET contact stories with Preston Dennett here tonight on Into the Paranormal. The website is ParanormalRadio.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Paranormal Show. Preston's website is Preston Dennett with two N's and two T's, PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. And you can also find him on Facebook as well. Preston is a researcher. He's a lecturer. He's an author. He's a ghost hunter. He knows a lot when it comes to the paranormal, and he writes about true stories of ET and UFO contact. Preston, why do you do this?
You know, I don't rightly know. I enjoy it. I kind of fell into it and found it really rewarding. I think it's a very important subject, UFOs and the paranormal. I think people need to know that there's life after death, that ghosts are real, Bigfoot, and that aliens are going to probably be a big part of our future and are a part of our society right now.
Do you think they're here permanently, or do you think they come and go?
I think they're here all the time. If you look at how many abductions are taking place and contacts and sightings, I mean, in California alone, there's reports on a daily basis to both MUFON and the National UFO Reporting Center. And like I said earlier, 1 in 100 people report their sightings. And that's still largely true. So any estimates of how common this is are vastly underestimated. I'm sure that right now there are people being taken aboard UFOs, people having face-to-face contact, ETs in people's homes, pulling them off highways. It's all going on a constant basis.
Preston, why do you think people are abducted?
You know, they're very interested in all things human. Been going on ever since the modern age of UFOs. I'm not sure why. But yeah, they're very interested in our bodies. I think that's one of their agendas, is definitely having to do with genetics, and in particular the Greys, hybridizing and creating hybrid babies. That's, you know, it's really hard to say. I looked at all the cases I've got, and it was evenly divided between men and women. There weren't a whole lot of patterns, really, at all. I noticed that people who are outside, they had a tendency to be more likely to see UFOs or have major encounters. But no real strong pattern that I could find. Maybe there was one loose pattern, particularly involving people who had UFO healings. And that would be that people who were more likely to have contact were people who were doing good for humanity in some way. And by that I would mean like social workers, doctors, inventors, people like that, writers, environmental activists. That's definitely a pattern that I did notice, but it wasn't super strong. So it's generational. We know that. I think that's been firmly established within the UFO community. So that's a factor. There are UFO hotspots. I think that's also a factor, as to, you know, driving through Topanga Canyon or maybe upstate New York increases your chances of having an abduction. So there are a million factors out there.
Preston Dennett, my guest, and you're welcome to call in at any time. Our number is 818-672-6865. Also, you can take advantage of great-sounding audio through Skype by clicking the link at parabnormalradio.com. Preston, author of Inside UFOs and many others. You're at 20 books now, right, Preston?
Yeah, it's insane. This is my 14th book on UFOs, but 20 overall. That's right.
What keeps you going?
Oh, it's just so interesting. You know, I'm loving it. I'm getting great response. I'm getting constant emails and phone calls and people coming up to me after, you know, lectures or contacting me, you know, after a radio show like this to tell their own story. And they just, gosh, I mean, they become very emotional. It's sometimes very hard for them to talk. And, you know, every time, particularly when someone has a really big experience, they tell me some kind of variation of, I'm not crazy, or I've never told this to anybody, or I've got a great job, or I'm well-educated, I'm not on drugs. But they're pretty much universally really happy to find someone who takes their stories seriously and can try and help them kind of spread the word. Because that's another thing I see when someone has a major experience. They want people to know, but at the same time they're embarrassed.
Why are people embarrassed, Preston? Are they worried about ridicule and maybe retaliation in some cases?
I think that's partly it. I think people don't want to be looked at like they're crazy. And that ridicule is still a factor, not as much as it used to be. I think they don't want to be looked upon as like bragging and saying, look at me, I'm in contact with aliens. They don't want attention. They don't want to go on TVs. For sure. I mean, whenever I have a television opportunity or a radio opportunity, it's hard to get witnesses to go on and tell their story. So they're private about it, yeah.
Preston, how do you get people to open up?
Well, it started with my friends and family, so I was not about to let them, you know, not tell me what's going on. They'd had an experience. So that was easy. But as time grew, you know, I kind of branched out my network and had a lot of people referring me encounters. And I was pretty aggressive, you know, like during the Topanga Canyon UFO wave, I was sending out flyers. I was, you know, canvassing house to house in areas where there had been landings and stuff like this. I was really out there looking. Got a lot of people from my office. You know, I work full time as a bookkeeper, and it's a pretty high turnover, and I've become kind of the paranormal clearinghouse there. So I get a number of reports from there. Some are just random and coincidental.
So if you have a story for Preston or you've got a question, he's here with us through the next hour. Then the telephone number 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. Inside UFOs features 10 all-new original cases of extensive contact with a wide variety of ETs, from normal everyday people who suddenly find themselves in very unusual situations. And so it's important to talk about who these people are, Preston. And like I just said, normal everyday people, probably people who, you know, work paycheck to paycheck, and they have more to lose than they do to gain from such a story like this, huh?
Oh yeah. So some, you know, actually a good portion of them did allow me to use their real names and are very vocal about their experiences. But yeah, a wide variety of men and women. One guy's a Navy medic. Another guy, well, when he had his encounter, he was a paper boy, but he's now a college professor. Another guy's a teacher. One's a secretary. You get the whole range. One, you know, I love getting a good witness, like a Navy medic. I got another Navy guy. He's an electronics specialist, because these guys are trained observers and, you know, have perhaps a more advanced education than your average witness. Like, there's a housewife in the book. Not to denigrate a housewife, absolutely. And her encounter is actually one of the more interesting ones. But yeah, all kinds of people.
Preston, how can you tell if someone's telling the truth or not?
Well, there are certain ways. Absolutely. After you've done it for a long time, you start to get a feel. When I interview someone, when they contact me, say, through email or coming up after I've spoken at a convention, I first see what kind of story they've had. If it's extensive, I'm definitely more interested, and I ask them to, you know, tell me what they experienced. And if I find it interesting, credible, if they look like they're sincere and are, you know, expressing what I feel is to be genuine emotion when they're telling it, then I'll do a follow-up interview. And this is when I can start to see if they're story changes or not, which is another way to tell.
Yeah.
And but beyond that, having been in this field for, you know, as long as I have, and talked to so many people, when they sit down in front of me, I'm like, okay, tell me what it was like inside a UFO. I kind of already have a good idea of what they're going to tell me, because it's not that different each time. Mm. Each story does have their own unique elements, but not entirely. So I kind of know what to look for, and there are still some rare kind of details that you don't hear a lot, even, you know, within the UFO field, that aren't super well known.
Well, we've talked about some of those particular in our last interview, but what are some of the common ones that that are shared among stories?
Well, one thing I hear all the time when someone's taken on board is regarding lighting. How do they describe the lighting? No one has ever really described light bulbs to me, ever. Lighting source is indirect. It appears to just come from the walls itself. That's very common. Also is the air. There seems to be a different quality to the air that they're breathing. Some people describe labored breathing. Others describe kind of a silkiness or a thinness to the air. They have difficulty describing it. But again, that's something I've definitely heard many times. And as far as the walls aboard a UFO, corners are never reported. Or I don't want to say never, because there is a case in the book where a lady was taken not inside a UFO, but into an underground base, apparently. And there were ETs there, at least one. And this place had carpet. It had cubicles. In many ways, it looked like, you know, an office, except for it was a large stadium and lots of unusual stuff going on there. So not always, but generally speaking, UFOs don't have any corners in them at all.
Say that last part again, Preston. They don't have any what?
Corners. The walls are rounded. The rooms are small, kind of dome-shaped or wedge-shaped. Uh-huh. They're not square rooms. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's another factor, or detail, rather. Mm-hmm.
Now, these stories that you documented inside UFOs, are these fairly recent ones, Preston?
They range, you know, some are earlier, some are later. What I have found is, I mean, there are some definitely from, you know, after the 2000s. But what I found is it takes a while often for people to find someone to tell their story to.
Yeah.
So by the time they reach me, you know, it's been a couple of years since they've had their encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, some of these are definitely from the 60s and 70s and 80s, but all through different decades, actually.
Mm-hmm. And so, Preston, do you do these interviews in person for the most part? Obviously, if we're talking about a significant distance between you and them, maybe over Skype or the computer is more likely. But what would you say, for the most part, the venue in which these interviews are conducted?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Let me see. Looking through the book here, I can tell you that the guy in Chapter 1, the Navy corpsman, I talked to him face-to-face. Yeah, I would say about 30, 40%. I talked to the lady who saw a giant praying mantis. The lady who saw an alien outside her window, that was face-to-face. She was someone from my work. So a lot of these people, yeah, I meet face-to-face. But there are a few... I'm one guy from the Ozarks in the Midwest there. I did not meet him face-to-face, but did it all through telephone interviews. Yeah.
So are there challenges when you're dealing with someone, say, further away, or is it more challenging when you're in front of someone?
Well, you know, I kind of like doing telephone interviews because it forces people to verbalize their experience. And when you're doing a face-to-face interview, there's a lot of communication going on that does not record well. Or translate well into words. So each kind of has their advantages. I prefer, of course, the face-to-face interview because you can really get to see the person and their expressions and get to know them as a friend. I'll reach out either way. It is more difficult if they're farther away, I think, especially if they've got, you know, evidence I want to take a look at, getting them to, you know, send me their medical records and things like this. It's not always easy.
All right, so Preston, these people report seeing quite a variety of extraterrestrial beings. They all report grays. We know about those. You mentioned praying mantis, type aliens, but also humanoids, and probably a lesser-known one, Nordics. Those are all some typical reports.
Yeah, I mean, we heard a lot about friendly aliens in the 1950s, George Adamski, Howard Menger, Daniel Fry, all these guys. And that whole contacting movement still kind of splits the UFO community. I'm a supporter of it. I think a lot of those guys were probably real, maybe not all of them. But then you stopped hearing about it, and everyone kind of wondered what happened as the grays took over. That's what most people were reporting. I personally think it went underground, the whole contactee phenomenon with friendly human-like aliens, but didn't stop. And now, yeah, I've been getting a lot more of these Nordics accounts of, they look just like us. I mean, well, not exactly. I don't want to say just like us, because they're usually described as being very similar to each other, almost to the point of being twins, or definitely like brothers. They're universally described as being very attractive, very healthy looking, muscular, and beautiful. So I find that kind of interesting.
I notice you used the term friendly aliens there, Preston.
yeah, you know, of course there's a bell curve when it comes to people's encounters, and I try to let, each case is individual. You have to let it speak for itself. But I used to get a lot more, you know, when I first got involved in this field, I was horrified. All these abductions by grays, and I'm like, what is going on? This is terrible. But as time went on, I started to get more of these more friendly accounts. And, you know, some of these do include grays. Not all grays are emotionless people who treat you like lab rats. I do get that kind of account. But, yeah, the friendly aliens, I'm a big believer aliens are not flying from light years or wherever they're coming from, other planets, the future, it doesn't really matter. I don't think they're coming here to hurt people. I don't think they're coming here to scare people.
Preston, why do you believe the aliens are here? What is their agenda on our planet?
Well, multiple agendas. I think we've got a pretty good handle now on why they're here, actually. Because when someone's taken on board a UFO, their experience doesn't vary all that much. The most common thing that happens, and this is according to a study by Thomas Bullard initially, who surveyed like 300 cases, and it certainly bears out exactly what I found in my research. The most common thing is being physically examined, and often genetic material is taken. Then there's the whole hybrid baby follow-up. I've got two cases like that in this book. I think that's definitely one of their main agendas. The story is, and this is coming from multiple sources, this is what the ETs have told people, that there was some sort of war or disaster on their planet and caused them to become sterile, or they tried to reproduce through cloning and kept having more and more gene problems and are trying to fix themselves through us. And a number of accounts where they say flat out, we are you from the future. It's easy to march out, I think, different cases to support various theories. But that's one main agenda for sure. I think there's the other main agenda is, again, very human-oriented. They seem very interested in all things human and all things Earth. And they're always, I mean, when someone talks to an ET, hands down, I bet you I know what they're going to say. It's going to be a warning from the ETs about nuclear power or about pollution or about upcoming hurricanes or disasters or wars, the violence on our planet, prejudice, these sort of things. Over and over again, I hear it. This is what ETs will talk when they do talk to people. Another very common thing is about alternative energy. I've got a case like this in the book, really interesting, involving a Navy electronic specialist. And he had an experience, where he was taught all about alternative energy. When someone's taken onboard a UFO, it's not unusual for them to be shown the engine room and shown how it works and told that, you know, you don't need to use fossil fuels, which are destroying your planet. And, you know, this is universal. Going back to the contactee era, right through to the Greys are saying the same thing. The Nordics are saying it. This goes right across various ET groups, so to speak. So I definitely think it says is one of their main agendas. And in addition to that, a third main agenda, or fourth, would be healing or alternative psychic development, environmentalism, channeling, psychic readings. People come away from these experiences interested in all these alternative areas, like, you know, water dowsing or hands-on healing and Reiki. I see that quite a bit. I think that's sort of... This is another pattern as to who gets contacted. They seem to be very interested in people who have a psychic or spiritual bent. And if they don't, they come away from that experience, the UFO experience, with that, feeling, you know, starting to channel or, you know, doing psychic readings or hands-on healing or something like that. So those, I think, are their main agendas. I think there's probably a lot of agendas. I know that they hover over minds and are taking our metals out. I've got cases involving all kinds of mines, iron mines, gold mines, it goes on.
Yeah, well, we'll get agendas into that with Preston Dennett when we come back and get further inside UFOs. I'm Jeremy Scott from the right to the left coast, where it is getting later by the hour. Hello, 11 o'clock hour on the East Coast, approaching 8 o'clock out here in Portland, Oregon. We'll be back after news and weather.
Subscribe to Into the Paranormal on your favorite apps. iTunes, Google Play Music, Spreaker, Stitcher, and more at ParanormalRadio.com.
Finding yourself a bit overwhelmed with the subject material tonight? That's a compliment. Preston Dennett is my guest as we roll into the final hour of the program tonight. We'll make the most of it in our time left with Preston. You were getting ready to tell us about a connection with the ETs to mines and metals, Preston.
Yeah, this is actually a chapter I wrote for a previous book, Not From Here. on which I collected all the UFO mine encounters I could find. And there was about 30 of them or so. And I found cases of UFOs hovering over iron mines, gold mines, titanium, uranium, copper mines, I mean, diamond mines, you name it, all across the United States and the world. And what I found really fascinating was these encounters were not just sightings. A lot of these involved landings. In some of these cases, the mines were being physically affected, and some actually involved humanoids as well. So, they're definitely interested in mining the metals of our planet. Arizona, I did a book, UFOs Over Arizona, and found a bunch. Turns out Arizona is the leading producer of copper in the United States. So you would expect, if that theory is true, they're interested in our metals, you would find some evidence of that. Boy, I sure did. All the copper mines there have literally a history of UFO sightings. Not just one or two, but some of them, several.
Preston, in these stories that we're about ready to get into, which of those, in your opinion, has the best evidence?
Well, probably a couple of them. The two last chapters, I'm going to say. But all have their varying amount of evidence. One lady, she had an encounter with a grasshopper type ET, a praying mantis type, and she found when she put her hands under a black light, they fluoresced. This seems to be something that does turn up in cases, and that's the type of evidence. It's certainly not the best evidence in these cases. One of the best comes from a lady who had an illness like hypoglycemia. And she was actually, sorry about that.
No, it's okay, Preston.
There was a lady who was healed of a hypoglycemia-type illness, and she was not able to get diagnosed by the doctors, but was instantly cured as a result of her experience, and somehow contracted tuberculosis as a child, so constantly got x-rays of her lungs and continues to. And one day, she's had a number of onboard experiences, goes to the doctor, and there's this artifact in her lung, a metallic ring. The doctors can't figure it out, and it slowly became coated with calcium as the body tried to protect itself. But it was put there by somebody. That's pretty good evidence. I think probably the best evidence comes from the last chapter, a guy named Kenneth. That's a pseudonym, who had repeated encounters with gray-type ETs and often came away from his missing time encounters, and sometimes fully conscious, with marks on his body, such as triangular marks or burns in some cases. He's had a lot of other witnesses that are involved with his case. So, I mean, each case has varying amounts of evidence.
Preston, let's get into the first one involving that of a Navy corpsman and, a 15-foot-tall praying mantis?
Yeah, that's right. He's a Navy corpsman. Great case. I've talked to this guy several times. His story does not change. Probably my favorite case in the book. He was on a Navy ship when his friend, his cabin mate, said, I'm in contact with UFOs. I'm in contact with aliens and have been since I was a little kid, and they've taken me to their planet. And Kevin was like, oh, yeah, right. He's always believed in UFOs ever since he was a little kid. He did a paper on UFOs and found out that they were real, but obviously did not believe his friend was telling the truth. It was just too outrageous. And a few days later, his friend comes into the cabin and says, I just went and visited your house. I saw your parents. I saw your shag rug. I saw the car outside, the convertible. And started describing all these details that were absolutely accurate, except they were from years in the past. So it was very hard for Kevin to explain what was going on. And finally, he said, this has to be time travel or something. He couldn't figure out what else it could be. And a couple of days later, his friend comes into the cabin, and what Kevin said is, if this is true, I want to meet your little green men. A couple days later, his friend comes in and says, okay, I'll see what I can do. and comes down to the cabin and says, they're here. Go up onto the deck and you'll see them, which Kevin does and sees this gigantic diamond-shaped craft hovering alongside the ship. This is absolutely huge, much bigger than the ship, covered with colored lights. And he tries to get other witnesses. He runs over to the mess cook there, shaking his shoulders and trying to get his attention, but is not able to do so, and instead finds himself on board this UFO. He's watched the Navy ship disappear in the distance. He's kind of looking through the UFO and can see through the side. It turns transparent, which is a weird detail, but I've heard this before. And has this incredible adventure. This craft suddenly takes him to his hometown, shows him his mom working at the schoolyard where she taught as a teacher, jumps over and shows his dad where he worked at a bank building and starts talking to him and says, your parents were really good people. They were honorable people. They did a good job. Kevin's thinking to himself, oh my God, it's daytime here. It's daytime on the ship where he was in the Philippines. So what's going on here? Are we time traveling? And why do they know about my parents? And why are they showing me this? They took him to the past. They showed him himself, actually, when he was a little boy. You could see his aunt there who had been deceased for many years. Suddenly they were taking them over this, what looks like a desert area. He's trying to identify it and can't. It's gray sand and he sees craters and he's getting this cold chill thinking, this looks like the moon. When they come up over the horizon, and he sees the Earth off in the distance. And mind you, he's still kind of looking through this, he's standing next to the wall in this UFO looking out through this transparent section at all this that's going on. And finally gets up the nerve to start talking to these guys. And they start answering him in his head, telepathically, with two or three different male voices. And he says, who are you? Where do you come from? And really interestingly, the room changed size, another detail I've heard, but very rare. And it expanded, and it was into a 3D star chart. And he saw this, our solar system, and stars off in the distance, and way, way, way off on the other side of the room was this little red light blinking. And they said, that's us. That's where we come from. And they started describing them about themselves. He would ask questions, and as fast as he could think them, they'd answer. And they said all kinds of stuff.
I can imagine, Preston, and as far as stories changing, you mentioned that the Corman, you talked to him many times, and his story never changed. As far as that point is concerned, that's very important because if stories are changing, there must be something to it. And so one of the reasons that a story might change is through a process such as regression, right, Preston?
That can bring out more details. And, people's stories do tend to change a little bit. They'll sometimes give slight variations. If it's too hard, cut and dry, I start to get a little worried because, there doesn't feel like they're really remembering it. Because there is a slight variation in memory, and certainly I've noticed this when I love getting multiple witness cases. I always try to get, character references and things like this. But when you get a multiple witness case, you get two people describing the same thing, and they're giving you, substantially different descriptions sometimes. And that sort of points actually to the veracity, because, some witnesses are not good witnesses. I had one case involving four people, and one of the guys I interviewed just was a terrible witness. Honestly, Preston, I was too scared. I could not look at it. And one guy, had seen a UFO before, and he was the best witness. The other two were just kind of so-so. Gave some details, but not as much as the one guy. So, yeah, each person have varying degrees of being a good witness. I really enjoyed this first case with Kevin Cameron because he was a great witness. He had a memory like a steel trap. He was recalling the whole conversations. I'd ask him again, and I'd get, new lines in the conversation, but it was generally the same rundown of what he had said before.
And how does that relate to the story of the office worker who told you about the praying mantis that I believe she saw?
Her case is very interesting. She's one of the few people who actually used hypnosis to recall her experiences. I totally trust hypnosis, but most of the cases in this book do not involve hypnosis, because I kind of wanted to stay away from accusations of false memory syndrome or things like that. I don't think that that's actually a problem with hypnosis. I think it actually works, and this case involving the office worker bears that out and matches up with other cases. She woke up one evening in bed, laying next to her husband with this horrible taste of garlic in her mouth. She had gone out to eat earlier that evening, but had not eaten some garlic. You know, she had brushed her teeth, and this was just so bad, it was choking her. And this was the first thing that kind of woke her up. Looking back over her life, she started to realize she had a lot of strange experiences, constant dreams about UFOs, weird experiences where figures would enter into her bedroom at night and she'd start getting impressions from them. And she eventually, you know, sought out a UFO meeting, and investigator Daryl Sims was speaking. And he's done regressions. She talked to him after the meeting, and he ended up regressing her. And under the regression, she recalled seeing on that incident involving, you know, waking up with this garlic taste. That's what he regressed her to. And she recalled seeing this 9-foot-tall, you know, grasshopper, you know, bug-like alien in her bathroom, shoving this cylinder down her throat, doing some kind of procedure. It was a very unpleasant experience. It scared the wits out of her. That just opened a whole can of worms.
Can of Worms says it mildly. Preston, author of Inside UFOs, Preston Dennett, my guest tonight. His website, Preston Dennett with two N's and two T's, .weebly.com. And you can click the link if you're at ParanormalRadio.com following along tonight. A little bit of a rocky listening experience for those of you who have been clicking us on and off on Spreaker over on the TuneIn Radio app. Through no fault of your own or of Preston's, we do have some internet outage problems here at Grand Central Station, so apologies for that, but I can tell you the podcast will be unaffected, and that will go up right away after this program is over. I know you can hear us for the most part, but it's just spotty in a couple of areas of the country, and not so much in other areas of the country, which is very, very weird. The story of a paperboy encountering a UFO and some missing time, and a lifelong impact that it had on this, was it a young child?
Yeah, just 9, 10, 11 years old, living in a small town in Texas, doing a paper route that he actually was kind of tired of. He had to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning on Sundays. And that's what happened one morning. He's up early trying to deliver papers. It's dark out. And this ball of light comes dropping down out of the sky, flying across the horizon, targets him, comes right over him. And he's thinking, well, what is this? At that time, he was kind of an aviation buff. He was really into planes as a kid and is trying to identify it and can't. There's no running lights. There's no wing lights. There's no strobes, nothing like this. Just this giant, giant ball of light. He's trying to figure out, you know, how close is this thing and how big is it, which is, you know, really hard to do if you don't know the size of it. But he can tell it's close, and it sends down this beam of light, or it flashes him with light, and he's dazed and disoriented and opens his eyes, and it's daylight. An hour, 2 hours have passed. He's completely disoriented, realizes he's going to have a lot of angry people with him regarding the newspaper, so he delivers the newspapers as fast as he can and comes home. His parents are furious. His boss is calling, and he's just tired. He's like, I'm going to bed. And in the days that followed this incident, he didn't tell anyone what happened. He did not want to. He didn't know what happened. He was very confused about it. But in the days that followed, he started to get weaker and weaker. And finally, it got to the point where he just couldn't get out of bed after about a week. And his parents rushed him off to the emergency room and took him to the doctor and ended up going to specialists, and they couldn't find anything wrong with him and gave him this kind of this vitamin cocktail and sent him home, where he pretty much stayed in bed for the next 3 months. He could not get out. He was just too tired. He couldn't go to school. I mean, he was excused from physical activities, lost a lot of friends because of this. It was a really traumatic experience for him, and he definitely blamed this object, which he was thinking now maybe was some sort of atomic flame. He got atomically irradiated. This is not unusual. I mean, it is kind of unusual in UFO cases, but certainly not unheard of, where people experience what looks like radiation poisoning. And I think that was true in his case. Thankfully, he did recover, but it kind of opened up his mind to, you know, what is going on with me. And looking into his past, as an adult, he recalled an incident that occurred in his family when he was just a boy. This was before the actual UFO encounter, where he woke up and saw this little man looking in through the second story window, you know, which should be impossible. And the only thing he remembers is it had weird eyes and a bald head. And of course, this is raising red flags to me. He screams, calls his sisters who come running up. The man is gone. But the whole family remembers this incident. It's become kind of the family lore. And he's now linking it to this UFO encounter. And later, as an adult, he began having nightmares where his 5-year-old daughter would go running around the bed, and he'd be just terrified. He was thinking, why am I terrified of my 5-year-old daughter? This makes no sense. And finally, he has this terrifying nightmare again, and it's not his daughter. It's more like an E.T., a sort of a Frankenstein monster-looking thing, is how he described it. So he does end up going under hypnosis. By this point, he's read a number of books about UFOs, and the regression hypnosis guy says, you know, this could contaminate your recall. Are you sure you want to do this? And the kid's like, yeah, of course I want to do. So he went under hypnosis and recalled actually something that was in many ways typical, but in some ways not. He was laid out, he was examined. He says it was so terrifying that he actually kept passing out, in and out, during the whole experience. But the ETs were not your typical grays. One was much taller and had a kind of a yellowish skin, but it did have large eyes and a bald head. The others actually were shorter and had a greenish hue to their skin and never actually did anything bad to him, never talked, never said anything that he recalls. And in most respects, it's kind of a typical onboard encounter. And he came away from that whole regressive hypnosis session a little ambivalent about it, thinking, you know, I'm not sure what to think of this. It's something because I read about it or what this means. But yeah, he fits the profile in a lot of ways.
That's just a weird, weird, weird story in so many different ways, Preston. And from that to the story of another young child who experienced these Nordics, which we talked about earlier in the program, as actually almost looking like twins.
Yeah, he had just gone out to mail a letter. Again, he was like 11 years old, I believe, and this was in St. Louis, Missouri, on a busy street. Suddenly, there's no cars, and there's this giant UFO over him, and it flashes this beam of light, and he runs home, and it's an hour late, and his mom is furious. See, this is what I'm talking about. You know, I can kind of predict what people are going to say, because I've heard this before. But then he starts to spontaneously recall what happened during this missing time. He didn't go under hypnosis. Some people just spontaneously recall immediately or sometimes during or you know, in the days and weeks that follow or even years later. He immediately recalled over the next few days being inside this thing, and there were these gorgeous-looking, human-looking Nordics, I guess you can call them. They looked just like humans, except their hair was very neatly cut. Their eyes were very mesmerizing. They had a kind of a tan complexion. They were wearing tight jumpsuits, black and white in color. And they held long, deep philosophical conversations with him that left him totally enlightened. Totally. I've had other people describe this, say, oh, you know, I felt more aware than I've ever felt before. I was more awake. And this is what he described. He said, I came away from that experience as though a veil had been lifted from my mind. And his grades immediately improved. He had been struggling in school, was going to be held back a grade, and instantly rose to the top of the class. And, it was an amazing experience, which started a lifelong series of contacts.
We'll continue. It'll be our final go-round with Preston Dennett coming up next. You're in the right place. as we bring this one home on this Saturday night. Our ride into the paranormal comes down the home stretch after another go-round of John Jeter and paranormal news. Stick with me.
On Facebook, like our page for all the updates at Paranormal Show.
This is Paranormal News. I'm John Jeter. Never before, since official reports have been kept, have this many UFO sightings been charted. Numbers from the National UFO Reporting Center have been increasing since the 80s, most dramatically between 1990 and 2000, to a record 45,000 sightings in 2010. Statistics from MUFON show a 67% increase in sightings from 2008 to 2011. Those of us here in the States are not alone in seeing an increase in UFO sightings. Canada's UFO investigative arm reported in 2012 that sightings had doubled from the previous year. So, what are these things? Misidentified aircraft? Super secret craft? Oh, it's a bird. No, it's a plane. No, it's a chicken, man. Or downright fraud. Probably a little bit of everything, wouldn't you say? After last week's story of mass demonic possession of schoolchildren in Columbia thanks to a Ouija board app, a kindergarten teacher in Milwaukee, Wisconsin is under fire for using a Ouija board in the classroom. This mother says her 5-year-old son is having nightmares and she wants that teacher fired, man.
They were shutting off the lights and shutting the windows or whatever and making it dark and spooky and talking to spirits. It's not something that should be at school.
The teacher said the kids had been asking for a scary story since Halloween, and it was all done in fun. Yeah. She took the board home with her while being placed on administrative leave pending the outcome of an internal investigation. You can just imagine what people were thinking in Tasmania as the sun came up on Tuesday. A fireball shot across the horizon just after dawn and lit up the sky. The internet is divided on what this thing is. Of course, there are standard alien conspiracy theories. Some say it's a plane, and at least one astrophysicist comments that it was going too slow to be a meteorite. What do you think it is? Take a look at ParanormalRadio.com and let us know. I'm John Jeter with Paranormal News.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, you're traveling into the paranormal with Jeremy Scott.
You know, there's something to these encounters. You just have to know, right? I mean, deep in the back of your head, you're just thinking, well, I don't want to admit it. I want to talk really quietly. I don't want to admit it because I'm worried about what other people are going to think. But deep, deep down inside, you know that these stories have to be true. Does that describe you? That describes my thoughts, because there are too many of them, friends. And why would these people come out of the woodwork and pretty much give us their life story, especially those who don't have anything to gain from it, and like I said earlier in the program, certainly have a whole lot to lose from doing so. We'll treat you with respect. This is an open forum if you want to share your UFO encounter. 818-672-6865 is our call-in number. Again, area code 818-672-6865, and I would welcome you at any point in time. Preston, back on the program. I appreciate you being here tonight.
Hey, my pleasure.
What is coming up for you professionally, Preston?
Well, I have another book coming out later this year, UFOs Over Colorado. I'm always working hard right now to publicize this book. I'm doing several very interesting interviews from people who've had sensitive encounters. Like wrapping up another book about activity in the Santa Catalina Channel and is there an undersea UFO base. I've been lecturing about that for some time now and been doing some amazing research. Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that whole project. So, boy, yeah, I'm always keeping busy. I have so much stuff I want to do.
Yeah, it seems like I turn around and you have another book out, and it's pretty much every couple of months, right, Preston? Seems like well, that.
Since 1996, I've been putting. You know, I started researching in '86. Took me about 10 years to write my first book, and I've been putting about one out per year.
Okay.
And I got a little bit overwhelmed and fell behind, so now I'm catching up. And not quite every couple of months, I'm hoping to put out about two books per year because I got a lot of stuff I want to get out. I've had all these cases piling up, and now I've got, gosh, hundreds of accounts that I think really deserve to be told. Mm-hmm.
I think one that deserves to be told as well is the one of the Wojay.
Oh, yeah. This is
the heck is that?
The Wojay is what some Native Americans called the Star People, who they believe are their ancestors. Now we're talking about, generally speaking, Nordic-type ETs. But yeah, I talked to this guy. His name is Stan Hughes. He's since become a very good friend. He's a full-blooded Blood Indian from Canada. And he's had these amazing encounters all his life. So that's several UFO sightings. Started having regular UFO sightings up at Lake Ponderay, located up on the upper Idaho panhandle. And he'd go up there with his family, and they'd just go there to enjoy the scenery and the nature, but started seeing UFOs, what they called nocturnal lights, which were kind of oval-shaped white lights whizzing pretty high up there over the lake. Sometimes would come down a little bit lower, sometimes weren't there at all, but one day they were there, probably the most interesting incident. They were really whizzing around, all these lights, a dozen of them, and one comes dropping down to almost eye level. They were kind of sitting on a bluff that overlooked the lake, and this object comes within a couple hundred feet of them and is just sitting there as if looking at them, when the little daughter, she cries out, "Daddy, Daddy, they're talking to me. What should I say?" And he says, "Well, tell them you love them." And so she says out loud, "I love you." And at that point, this object flares up bright blue and so intensely that it actually left after images on the whole group's retinas after the experience, and kind of came towards them at this point and floated low over their heads and off into the distance. But it was sort of an interactive encounter and exactly the type of encounter this guy keeps reporting. And his family. So another very similar incident. He was out camping by himself this time, and this nocturnal light shows up. It's this bright, kind of oval-shaped light. It starts getting closer and closer, and as it got really close to him, he could feel this feeling of fear, almost like terror. And then it would back up, and then it would come closer, and this kind of feeling of dread will get stronger and stronger. And it did this over and over again until the point he's like, "Gosh, I think they're trying to warn me of something." And nothing seemed untoward or unusual. Didn't know what to make of it until the next morning when he gets home and realizes his son, who had been having some major emotional problems, was having an incident. And he now feels that this UFO is trying to warn him to get back home. And what's really interesting is there was a follow-up to this. They had a healing ceremony for their son. This was a traditional Native American healing ceremony with the whole family and, you know, part of their tribe all together, doing all these kind of ceremonial things. And after the whole healing ceremony was done, this giant flying saucer, typical flying saucer, metallic, lights all around it, comes right down over the group. It's shaking the trees. They can hear it humming. And they're all just in awe, looking up at it. And Stan's like, yeah, they came to celebrate our healing ceremony. And that's what pretty much everyone in the group felt. But I'm going to say his most amazing encounter was where he had a face-to-face encounter with these guys, with the Woje. He was driving along one morning. It was early in the morning. He had his dog in the car. He was driving along this remote road up in that same area. And starts to feel kind of strange, or not entirely disoriented, but sort of sedate and a little bit almost sleepy. And he feels this swishing, or hears the swishing noise, and he stops the car, and this giant object lands right in front of him on the road. It's a perfect sphere, absolutely metallic, like chrome, brilliant, mirror-like surface. A door opens right in front, and out steps this really handsome man. And he made a point of that. He says, man, Preston, this guy was good-looking. He had an Arabic appearance, sort of a dark Middle Eastern appearance, dark hair, dark eyes, was muscular, dressed in a blue jumpsuit and silver boots, and comes walking out of the UFO right up to Stan's car, right up the windshield, and kind of smiles and raises his hand in greeting. And Stan's just absolutely overcome with a feeling of kinship and longing to go with this guy. And that's exactly what he thinks. He cries out kind of mentally, oh, no, take me with you. I want to go with you. And the Nordic, or the Woje, his smile drops, his hand drops, and he kind of just shakes his head, and this look of sadness comes into his eyes. And he turns around, walks back into the UFO, which, you know, the door closes, and it goes straight up. So, yeah, really incredible benevolent encounter. I've talked to other Native Americans who've had that type of encounter that's just incredibly benevolent. It's just amazing.
Final few minutes with Preston Dennett tonight as we wind down with you on this Saturday into Sunday. 818-672-6865. That's 818-672-6865. And you can also Skype in at Into Parabnormal. The link's up on the website, parabnormalradio.com. Preston, do the majority of people that you interview, which is now in the hundreds, by the way, listeners, do they say that they enjoy their encounters?
Some do, some don't. Some definitely don't. Some absolutely do, and kind of get the majority a little bit ambivalent about them. A lot of people will tell me, you know, it wasn't a particularly pleasant experience, but I'm glad it happened. And it really woke me up. I get that a lot. A lot of people say that they would not take it back, even though it wasn't particularly pleasant. But the effects were so beneficial that they would, you know, not trade that off. So it's kind of a full-on bell curve. I found that ET behavior falls under much the same umbrella as human behavior, except it's skewed towards the positive spectrum. In that, like I mentioned earlier, there's no evidence of sadism or Nazi-like torture or them coming to hurt people and enjoying it. So, you know, some people, and this is kind of interesting, can have the same identical experience, you know, where they're taken on board and examined and, you know, maybe given a few messages, and they come away from the experience like, ah, that was horrible and terrifying and these were monsters. And others were like, you know, that was the most interesting experience of my entire life. So part of it is how the witness is able to handle their fear level. And certainly people who are less afraid seem to have more benevolent interactions. Like that guy, the kid who had a encounter with Nordics, he had many encounters with greys following that. And, you know, a lot of people who have, you know, encounters with greys are not particularly happy about it, but his were absolutely benevolent. He would talk to them and they'd explain things. They showed him how they traveled through high G's, put him actually in a chair, much like Betty Andreessen had described, which filled with liquid, and he was made to actually breathe it. They told him flat out, yeah, this is how we transport humans aboard our craft. They told him about implants. They told him how they were able to turn walls transparent and take him through. Well, they actually demonstrated it for him. on two or three occasions. So he had a very interactive kind of relationship with them and called them his friends.
Preston, hostile or benevolent are these creatures, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think they're hostile. I don't necessarily think they're all coming here to save our planet either. And I think that is their main message, but they're not intervening on Fukushima, are they? And millions of people are dying of heart disease and cancer and what have you. So I don't think, I mean, they're necessarily here to save us, but I know some researchers feel that they take a dim view of this, that ETs are here for a hostile takeover, the hybrids or what have you. There's a good segment of people, particularly the very religious, who feel that this is a demonic phenomena. I don't believe that at all. I studied demonology intensely because of that accusation. It's a completely different phenomena. It does not fit the pattern. No, I don't think they're hostile. I think, generally speaking, they're right there in the middle of the bell curve. They're mostly tourists and scientists and sort of that sort of, label I would put on them.
Preston, one more tale for us tonight from Inside UFOs. Which one do you want it to be?
Well, I would tell the story of Connie Lopez. She was somebody I worked with for quite some time. Walks into my office and sees this statue of a gray on my desk that someone had given me, a tiny little statue, and screams out loud, loudly, and says, what is that? And she says, I saw one of those when I just had my son. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. Often I hear people who are 8 months pregnant, 9 months pregnant, just had their baby or maybe a couple months old, have these encounters. And here it was happening again. She had just had a baby about a week earlier. This was sometime before she told me this. And woke up to hear this sort of squeaky noise, like the sound you make when your fingers rub against glass in dishwater, against a finger squeaking against glass. She's looking around trying to figure out where it's coming from, and it's coming from this big picture window in her bedroom. And right below the window is where she put her son, in the corner of their bedroom, to watch him. He was only 2 weeks old. And there, behind this window, is this 6-foot-tall, gray-type ET, an unusual type in that he was very tall, did not appear to be wearing anything or any jumpsuit, had a very large head, bald, dark eyes, that common description we hear so much. But what was really interesting was its hands, which she said had these little suction cup, like octopuses have on their suckers, suction cups on its fingers. And it was trying desperately to open this window. And here's what's weird, Jeremy. This window can't be opened. It doesn't have any latches. It's fixed to the wall. It doesn't open. And this ET, this advanced being, can't figure that out. And it's not walking through the walls like most grays do. So this has some weird elements to it. It's just looking down at her baby and kind of at the mobile that's hanging above the crib, looks over at Connie, who jumps up, to rescue her child, and this ET slams her down into the bed somehow with some mental force or something, and she's paralyzed. She can't move. She can't cry out, but she can see this thing, and it's just staring at her baby and continues to try to open this window for the next minute or two. She says it was quite a long time, long enough where she could feel the tears just pouring from her eyes and pooling on, the pillow below her. And finally, it just gives up, walks away. She jumps up, scoops up her baby, screaming, wakes up her husband, and says, it's a nightmare, it's a nightmare. And she's like, no, it wasn't. And she left the house the next day and went to live with her mother for 2 weeks, came back. They found no evidence of the ET, no fingerprints, nothing outside. They bought 2 guard dogs. And finally she says, you know what, I want to move. And the husband agreed. She was just so upset. They ended up selling the house and moving away.
Understandably so. Preston, it's been my pleasure talking with you again tonight. I look forward to our next appointment on the radio, and best of luck to you.
Hey, I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoy talking with you.
Absolutely. That is Preston Dennett. Preston Dennett with two N's and two T's. Weebly.com. You can just click the link at paranormalradio.com. We've got all of his links up there as well. His Facebook page, link to the book, Inside UFOs, which we've talked about tonight. What do you think about these topics? We've got a couple minutes left if you want to call in at 818-672-6865, 818-672-6865, or you can Skype into Paranormal. Finally, our internet problems, particularly on the TuneIn radio app, and for those of you listening on Spreaker as well, have stabilized. I have noticed that we've been up for the longest we have been the entire program tonight. So, I don't know. It was one of those things. Nothing changed on this, and it just all of a sudden started working. But nonetheless, I digress. Just some very, very odd stories tonight, as they always are from Preston. And as I said at the beginning of the program, they come with absolute 100% credibility in my mind. Preston is one of those guys that doesn't beat around the bush when it comes to telling the truth. He's been doing it for an awfully long time. A lot of people trust him to tell their stories, and I certainly do as well. Next week on the show, we're going to talk about life after death. Joining me is going to be the psychic lawyer, Mark Anthony. He's a lawyer, and he is psychic. And we're going to be talking about evidence of eternity and never letting go. Evidence of the afterlife next week with, of course, the psychic lawyer, Mark Anthony. And then, coming up in 2 weeks, it's going to be one of those programs that you will want to be here. And if you can't join us live, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. We are literally pretty much all over the place, and we make the links very easy for you to click on at paranormalradio.com. Because Dr. Lynn Kitai will be here. If you don't know who Dr. Kitai is, she is one of the world's foremost authorities on the Phoenix Lights events. It is the most notorious, the most significant mass UFO sighting of our time. And it happened pretty much around 20 years ago, peaking on March the 13th, in fact, 1997. So here we are. In fact, there's a reason that Preston writes about UFOs in Arizona, because there's a lot of weird stuff that happens in Phoenix and in Arizona, and Dr. Lynn Kitai will be here in 2 weeks, March the 18th. I told you that we're going to bring Stephen Bassett on the program along with the disclosure activists to talk about the international quest that has moved abroad for Stephen Bassett on the ET UFO subject, which we've hit hardcore tonight with Preston, because Stephen apparently can't do business here anymore, as Donald Trump has put an end to lobbyists for at least 5 years. Stephen Bassett has had to relocate over to London. In fact, we're actually going to be hooking up when he is in Oregon. He'll be here in Oregon, actually down at a conference a little bit south of me. It'll be a shame that we won't be able to hook up in person, but otherwise it is much too late for us to talk when he is in London and the time that this program usually takes air over there. So Stephen Bassett, the disclosure activist, coming up on March the 25th, and I'm working on some big-name guests. I actually heard from some of them, some more big-name guests, because, of course, we do bring those here on the program, like Preston tonight, Stephen Bassett, Dr. Lynn Kitai, and more will be coming up on the program in the weeks to come. Episode 200 tonight. It's been fun having you with me. We suffered through a little bit of internet difficulties, particularly in the first hour plus of the program, but things finally stabilized, as maybe we weren't revealing too much tonight on the program. I don't know. I thought we certainly delved quite deep into the subjects with Preston. You know, we live in a time where with the technology the way it is, you can literally pull out your phone and be the news. It's an exciting time we live in. There are people, though, who we have documented many times that have ulterior motives and do not do it with the best of intentions. But for those who actually do have these experiences, one day, one point in time, there is going to come the undeniable proof that everything we have long suspected and much argued about is actually 100% legit. Until I talk to you in 1 week's time, next Saturday on these airwaves, all across the country on our fine affiliates on 1610 Valentine Radio in Texas, also WLRU in Hillsboro, Ohio, 106.9 on the FM dial, the digital radio network KCOR out of Las Vegas, and of course on the TuneIn Radio app. We're powered by Radionomy on Spreaker, the podcasts on Stitcher, Google Play Music, iTunes, and everywhere else, of course. From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon, somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I'm Jeremy Scott. Good night.